You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Sweet, the Lady's Guide to Bro Culture. My name is Gina Bloom, and this is the podcast where I, a transgender stand-up comic, currently quarantined in lovely Van Nuys, California, bring on some of my favorite funny ladies onto the pod, onto the Zoom, no longer doing these live in person. And we talk about the best, the worst, the strangest things of bro culture that my guests have never experienced before. We bring on another guest that is a designated fan slash apologist, although really no apologies necessary for today's subject. Today we are talking about 1998's multiple Oscar winning AFI all-time 100 best feature films, Library of Congress 1994 inductee, Saving Private Ryan, directed by Steven Spielberg, with his receiving his second directing Oscar. It was a huge hit, made my dad cry. So, you know, there's really not much introduction necessary. It's the story of a company, an army company that has been dispatched to save Private Ryan. There he goes, right there in the title. They land. They land on Omaha Beach for D-Day. A visceral battle ensues for about 20-30 minutes of screen time. And upon surviving that by the skin of their teeth, they are given this assignment to locate an army private that has paratrooped behind enemy lines by accident. And he is the last surviving member of his family. His three other brothers have all died basically within the same week, and the army wants to call him home so that his mother doesn't feel any worse than she already does. There are some ethical quandaries to that particular plot, and to the film's credit, they explore that quite at length. This is what a lot of people consider to be the greatest war movie ever made. Let's see here. So Gene Siskel of the Chicago Tribune at the time says that Private Ryan accomplishes something that I had been taught was most difficult, making an action-filled anti-war film, or at least one that doesn't in some way glorify or lie about combat. That was part of the 93% fresh meter on Rotten Tomatoes. There's very few negative reviews, one of which was by Neil Norman of the London Evening Standard, who says at the time, "The result is, I am sorry to say, Private Ryan seems almost banal in its achievement, a film that sacrifices humanity for technical wizardry." And on the pod today, I'm so excited to have my guests. We have a really interesting, lively crew for you. I am so excited to bring on my first guest. She's a new friend from the LA comedy scene. We've been sort of floating around each other on the internet, and you know, here we are. From our respective Zoom rooms, please say hello to the lovely Kari Asad.
Hello. Hi. I'm excited to be here. And also, I'm a fan of your stand-up too, Gina.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
Yes.
I'm curious though. Like when did you happen to catch me? Cause like, it feels so distant.
circled each other around the ladies' mic.
At the West Side.
Yeah, at West Side. Yes.
Okay.
And then I think I've also catched you like at a show. I think I was supporting Valerie's show, and I saw you there.
Oh, right on. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I love me some Valerie. Yes.
She's the best.
Her and Jeff have been on this particular podcast, and she's also been on my stand-up show that I would love to have you guys on someday when stand-up returns. We actually just put our Zoom show on pause for a month, so even that is even that's waiting for us to get energy back. But joining Kari is another comic. This guy is from the New York scene, and we were also, you know, on shows and floating around each other, and I've always wanted him on this particular podcast because, for one thing, he seems like a good dude, and we do love good dudes. But he is also a vet, and given today's subject and the fact that this is Memorial Day weekend, it seems awfully appropriate that we have as our designated apologist the lovely Pete Stegmaier.
Yay. Hey, thank you. I try to be a good guy, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, you seem like you're a good dude. Yeah, I you know, we've been in the comedy scene together for a little while now, so like, If good dudeness had been not part of your bag, then I think I would have heard. Yeah.
Fair enough. It's always hard because I think the first time I met you was at a roast battle show, like one of the comedy fight clubs.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And then it's just like you're saying the worst things you can possibly say about other people.
Yeah, roast. You know, you caught me during like the 6 months that I thought roast battle was like a thing I'd want to do with my life. Like, not even, it was like one summer. I was like, yeah, I'll give this a shot.
In New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were doing a comedy fight club, which is like the mutant version of roast battle. It's with like even dumber rules, but I actually thought about doing like a roast battle episode of this podcast, bringing someone to a roast battle for the first time and then having them be horrified. But since we're not doing live comedy, that's just going to have to wait till season 3. All right. So, Kari, you messaged me over Facebook that this movie gutted you. Please expound upon this as you give us your first impressions of Saving Private Ryan.
I just want to say thank you to all the vets who served. And I'm so thankful for your service, and thank you for doing that. And what I'm going to say about the movie does not reflect how I feel about veterans at all. But that the minute the movie started, I wanted it to be over. I kept checking the time to see how much was left. My boyfriend joined me a quarter way through, and then we both started freaking out. didn't waste any time. It really gets right into the guts and men screaming mommy. I'm not a mom, but that affected me. And I thought I was gonna throw up for 3 hours, and then I thought I was gonna throw up for the rest of the day. It made me want to text all the vets I know and say thank you, but I'm always so concerned I sound like condescending or like not, you know, just like naive and stupid. So I didn't do that. But thank you, my cousins who served and my one friend I had growing up. It hit me. I didn't really like, I had a hard time telling the characters apart because they're all wearing helmets. Mm-hmm. At one point I realized, I forgot his name. There's like a really famous actor. He whips his helmet off. I'm like, how long has he been here? I was like, is he part of the story? I was like, what? The guy from Liar Liar with Frankie Muniz and Amanda Bynes. Isn't he in it? He like whips his helmet off and I'm like, what the hell?
Oh yeah. Oh my God.
When did he get here? And then.
There's a lot of those that guys that pop up in this movie for like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
5 seconds.
Like Vin Diesel's in it.
Vin Diesel. I recognized his voice, but his helmet just like cowers over his eyes. And it's not till they pronounce him dead. I was like, okay, I was right. That's how I got myself through this movie. I would just like pull up pictures of them and other things, like the guy who like Tom Hanks basically sacrifices. I just pulled up pictures of him as Phoebe's brother. And I was like looking at it as I was watching the movie, and I was like telling my boyfriend, Mark, I was like, see, look, he's Phoebe's brother. He's like, I understand that. He's like, And yeah, it was actually, I didn't really like Tom Hanks in the movie. I had to keep reminding myself that this was World War II. I think I kept putting myself in the wars we fight today, where the intention feels murky, whereas like World War II was like such a straightforward intention. And so like Tom Hanks's character does like make sense, but like I was like, he just keeps leading everyone down this way. And I really was on the crew side in that scene where they attack that one dude who has all the ammo. I was like, they should keep walking. I don't know. So yeah, it made me feel gutturally ill for like several hours.
Oh boy. All right. We got a lively discussion. Not the reaction that I got out of gutted, but like, no, this is going to be a fun one. All right, Pete, tell us why you picked Saving Private Ryan. I basically gave you all of war movies to choose from.
Yeah, that was a tough one, because it's a big field.
Yeah,
I really I usually don't watch war movies very often. Like I, mm-hmm. like I've seen a lot of people say like, oh, like 1917 looks like amazing, and it does. But like, I would straight up have like a panic attack if I watched that now.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah.
But one of the things that I did like about like this one was like, A, it came out, like I had seen it before I like joined the army and stuff like that. But like when I like keep watching it, it's like one of the few ones that I watch somewhat regularly. Because I think it was the Ebert quote you said where, like it does a good job of like explaining the war, but it doesn't like glorify anything. And it's kind of like there, and you can like take it, like I can like watch it as it is, but like, it's not like one of those things where it's like, oh, this is like so cool. And like everything, yeah. Like, cause I don't like, cause like in real life, it's like war is like super shitty. I realize that's like a gross underselling it, but
you have the authority to do that though, because like you've seen it, so super shitty is an honest response.
Yeah, and I like that the war is like something that's happening like secondary to the actual plot, and like that it was like based in history with like the Sullivan laws, because there was like there were like five brothers from Iowa, I think, that all died on a battleship. And that's why like they made that rule where like you couldn't be like stationed with your siblings anymore, because like that family lost like everybody in one day.
Right.
And so I liked the history part of it. And I liked that it was like showing like how bad it could be, but not like trying to like sell it. Like, cause so many of the movies now are like recruiting commercials, and like that I hate.
Yeah.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
All right, Cardi, yeah, interesting. All right, so I'm going to take this a little bit of a different direction then, given your response. What other, have you seen a lot of like this genre of film?
So yeah, so when you put out your post looking for people, I was really hoping to get like Rick and Morty or Saving Private America. I was like, please. And as soon as I typed it, I was like, la la la. I was like, I'm going to get Saving Private Ryan. I know I'm going to get it. I don't do well with violence in movies either. Like, yeah. Like my favorite movie is The Birdcage. And so,
you're not the first person on this show to say that their favorite movie is The Birdcage, by the way. We had someone just like 3 weeks ago say the same thing.
I watch it every year on my birthday and when I'm really, really sad. It makes me feel alive. And then, I don't know, I want to own a club in a sunny area. But yeah, so no, I don't watch, like, I was like, as I was getting it queued up, I was like, Spielberg made this. I watched War Horse and I survived that, you know.
Yeah, a little bit different experience, War Horse versus Private Ryan. Yeah.
And then I was like, I saw Gladiator, but I generally don't like war movies actually because of what Pete said about glorifying war. And as I was watching Saving Private Ryan, I didn't look it up. I think honestly, because I was so affected that I was like, I don't really want to dig into this movie anymore. But I was curious, like, what Spielberg's intention was, because I was like, it just made me think a lot about this friend I had growing up who was like into the James Bond movies and like into like the like, oh, man is strong, man go, you know, woman die. Battle, you know, whatever. And so I just was like, did he see this? Because he did, he was a Marine and he's home now, but I was like, did he see this and think this is what I want, like this makes me man, like experiencing that? And so I'm glad to hear that it was an anti-war movie, because it definitely, I was glad to hear that was the intention. And I think that's why I had such a hard time digesting the movie while happening, because I was like, what am I supposed to be taking away from this? And yeah, I think I just honestly kept thinking about that kid I knew growing up. I was like, did this movie make him go join the Marines like he did? And does that do that to other boys? It just made me want to hug a man and be like, don't listen to them. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it is an anti-war movie, but it's not an anti-war movie at the same level of intent that, like, say Full Metal Jacket is, which is Stanley Kubrick's movie about the Vietnam War, and half of it takes place during like drill instruction, and it, and you do not want to join the military watching this thing. But actually a lot of people did. They watch Private Ryan, or they watch Full Metal Jacket, and they see how horrible it is, and for whatever reason it's like, okay, sign me up for this. This is what I'm looking for. So even films that profess an anti-war, you know, tone or agenda, still get people wanting to join anyway.
Right. Yeah. I have a friend whose son is in, I don't know which branch he's in, but he's in the Army or Marines. And he said, yeah, I think he just played too much Call of Duty. And I was like, that game is so violent. Why do they want more of that? I don't understand.
Well, that leads me to my next question to Pete. You said you saw this before you joined. That makes sense, because it would probably make you like 13 or, you know, 9 years old when this came out. So I don't think you could have. But did films like this, you know, influence your decision to enlist, or was there something else that gave you the idea?
You know, it was really I'm 35. I'm going to be 36 in July. And so, like, Most of my decision for joining the army and stuff like that is I had like a couple relatives, like a grandfather and an uncle that were in the army. But like when my first day of high school, or my first day of my senior year of high school, was 9/11. So,
wow. Okay.
Like that was kind of like getting into school, and then like seeing that, like as soon as we got there, it was like one of the big things. Like I was in Wisconsin at the time.
Yeah.
But that was like one of the big things, because I had no idea what I wanted to do as far as like college and stuff like that, because I wasn't. Yeah. And so that was kind of like one of the big things that motivated me, because I'm not like a very manly, like tough guy. Like, and I wasn't in like high school either. Like I played, like I was like one of those ones that was like tough by like approximation. Like I was on the football team, but I was the kicker.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, I bet you're a lineman. I'm like, no, I kick the ball. Like that's what I like to do.
Right.
And so it wasn't like, I didn't really have like a big, like macho thing with it. It was just kind of like, well, this seems like what I should be doing.
My dad was a longtime veteran of the Navy, two tours in Vietnam, and highly discouraged me from doing anything military. He was like, wow. This is not what you want to do. He was very skeptical of them. But on the other hand, he really loved war movies. And it was the only thing that we had in common were movies. He was a movie fan. I was a movie fan. Like, we had nothing else in common, but I couldn't watch, you know, The Birdcage with him, because he didn't want to watch that. So, yeah, it was war stuff. That was kind of like our common ground. So whenever I wanted to bond with my dad, we'd go to the movie theater or I'd rent something, and we'd watch, you know, movies, and Private Ryan was one of them. He said that he was a gunner on a rescue helicopter, and he would just shoot guys indiscriminately while he picks Holy people shit. Up. So he'd seen you know, the visceral combat, and even he was like, yeah, that Private Ryan, they kind of went a little too far with the violence on that one.
Wow.
Yeah, so
Thing.
Which I thought was high praise to the film, personally, that this guy who's personally, you know, probably shot like 30 people in his life, said that it was a little too real for him. So kind of the same experience that you had, Pete. All right, let's talk about the film itself, hopefully without causing any more trauma to you. I've already caused.
I mean, I could have easily texted you and said, "Hey, I can't watch this," and turn it off. You know?
Yeah, and I would have found another topic for you. I'm not gonna be like, "All right, get out the fuck off my podcast." Then, like, I'm not an asshole.
My boyfriend was like, "Why are you doing this to us?" I'm like, "I want attention on the internet."
All right. So let's talk about the film, though. It's like we said, it opens on a high note. Depending on your definition of what a high note is, it's the Omaha Beach invasion. Captain Miller, played by Tom Hanks, arrives with his crew, and they storm the beach at Normandy and encounter a lot of resistance, a lot of visceral resistance from, you know, the German regular army. And it's chaos. It's chaos personified. There's bullets whizzing from every direction. You can't tell one person apart from the other. And honestly, this movie kind of started that trend of having dudes in helmets, and you can't tell one guy apart from the other, because they represent all one soldier. And like, you saw that in a lot of movies around that time or after it, like 1917 is very much, you know, the anonymous soldier trope. Dunkirk, same thing. I think that Private Ryan did that first. Usually in like older war movies, you see dudes with like their names written on the front of their helmet so you can tell them apart, because they wanted to, like, you know, oh, this is Wingnut from, you know, from Kansas. So like they made sure that they knew one guy apart from the other. So they spend the first half hour just like getting pinned down and cut to shreds. And it's horrible. It's violent. Cardi, give me, there's not a lot of plot in that first section. Give me your reaction for just that opening sequence?
No, I was just like, no. I was like, nope. I was like, is this? I was really bracing myself that that would be the whole movie. I was like, is this it? Like, just them? Like, I should have paid attention more to the titles and realized it was D-Day. But I was like, oh, I was like, oh, are we in Italy? I was like, oh, you know, it's World War II. I was like petting my ego, like, you know history, you know where they are. Freaking dumbass. I don't think I was feeling sick yet. Mm-hmm. I think it was a close up of a guy holding his own gut screaming mom.
Yeah, that'll do it. Yeah, I know exactly. Yep.
That made me begin to feel sick. But when all of that violence happened at first, I immediately detached myself from the movie. I was like, I'm not here for anyone but myself, is like what I kept telling the screen. And like, especially there's like a character collecting sand. I'm like, I don't care about your character traits. I'm here for myself. I'm not going to get attached to you and your sad story.
Far from South Beach at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, because there was a guy who's like collecting sand and like labeling it and stuff. I think it's Tom Hanks's friend.
The Tom Sizemore character, the second in charge.
So, it was, I don't know. I guess I also, I felt sick, but also it was like, you know, I'm so far left. And I guess it made me a little great. I'm like grateful to like see into what another point of view would be, I guess.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, this film is apolitical, but also inherently kind of conservative because it's a war movie about Americans triumphing. Yeah. So yeah, I get what you're saying. It's not like you're watching, like something like We Were Soldiers or something like that, which is like a very Republican film. It is inherently sort of like pro-America because these are American characters, but it's not, it doesn't feel like propaganda, at least not to me. Pete, I guess the same question, if you can remember back when you first saw it, like how did you feel just on the Omaha Beach section? Cause that is sort of like the film's calling card.
Yeah. I remember the first time that I saw it, I was like blown away by it because I had, I remember like our movie theater, used to like, they would have the showings, and then afterwards they would have like, people standing at the doors with like tissues for like, and you'd see like veterans like walking out and like crying and stuff like that. And they did. And I remember thinking that it was like crazy powerful, and just like absolute chaos and like, oh my God, I can't believe like, how did these guys do this? And then like, watching it again, like after the army, I'm even more like, and I think that's something that's like pretty common with like veterans of the like Afghanistan and Iraq wars, mm-hmm. is like looking back at like Vietnam and World War II and being like, how the hell did you guys do this? Like, because it's like just such a different, like such a different experience from like the way that we fight war now. And yeah, just being like overwhelmed and being like, you know, I don't think I could do that. And just like, it really made me like very self-reflective, like the whole mm-hmm. time I was watching that.
Let's go back to when you got out of the service. How did you feel about like war media and things like that? You said you were never really much of a fan.
Yeah. I mean, there were some that I thought were like, there are some movies that I think are really good. Like I love like Tropic Thunder because of like the satire of it all.
Yes, yes.
But a lot of it, like, I just can't. I felt like I saw like so much like brainwashing and like cult, cult things like in the military that it just like, it feels weird to me now to like that there's this like huge recruiting machine, like working through Hollywood and also like sponsoring like NASCARs and stuff like that to like get people to do this. That a lot of it, like, if it, like, really glorifies, it just makes it feel dirty.
Yeah.
And it just, like, it's weird because, like, like I feel like I joined the military for like a pretty like clear cut reason. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't want to get into this like whole, like, you know, more pious or, you know, holier than thou, thing that a lot of people do, but I just like, I never really felt like excited about it. It was like, okay, well, this is something I have to do, but it wasn't like, but they're like, a good example, I guess, is when I graduated from basic training, like that weekend was the weekend that 300 came out in theaters. Mm-hmm. And so me and a bunch of like the guys that were in my basic training platoon, like we went and saw it, and they're like cheering and going, oh, oh, like, and I'm just like, oh guys, you are like drowning in the Kool-Aid right now. Like we haven't even like done shit. And like, I just like, I didn't get like the chest beating of it. And yeah. I'm like, oh, this is definitely just like a very tribalistic like thing that I'm just like, I guess I just missed the memo on.
All right. Well, this episode has taken a really unexpected turn, because I, as the transgender person, feel like I'm being overrun by hippies.
But... yeah, me and Pete are like on the same page. This is wild.
Yeah, it's just not. Hey, you know, we're gonna ride the wave. We're gonna ride the wave. That's right. We're gonna take it as it comes. But that is fascinating. Yeah, I saw Pete when you mentioned Tropic Thunder, that Cardi like lit up. So it seems like you guys have a, you know, like sort of like complementary taste when it comes to like taking the piss out of the military, taking like, you know, satirizing it. So I think Cardi, like maybe this is a problem of tone. Like if how would you have felt if this movie were just as violent, but like was something more satirical, like something like a Vonnegut adaptation?
Yeah, then maybe I think I would have kind of not felt so guarded watching it. Mm-hmm. I think especially the scene where they like gather and realize the mother is receiving the letters and they're like, we gotta fix this, it's America. I was like, fuck no, they wouldn't have done that. Like, I believe a woman would have flagged it and been like, hey, you know, right, we probably shouldn't send all three on the same day.
Yeah, that's yeah, a little bit of bad taste, sure.
Yeah. But the fact that all these like men in suits were like, we gotta fix this boy for a man, I was like, no, come on, Spielberg. Like, seriously, fuck off. Like, that really was the, I think the thing I hated the most about the movie was that scene. But like, besides all the violence. But yeah, I think if I understood that it was coming from a place of trying to deter people from war, then
I don't know if it necessarily was.
Okay.
I think that's part of it, but I don't think that was the intention of it. I think that, you know, Spielberg is something of a World War II stan. So I think he definitely wanted to like, you know, do something like this for a long time, because he's, he had done, you know, all those Indiana Jones movies where he's having, you know, that take place around World War II, and he actually did a couple of World War II movies that were not as big, like Always or 1941. So I think he wanted to do like a straight up sort of like a John Ford, like Longest Day type movie, but also marry it to more of the contemporary like Vietnam type films that he probably saw like his contemporaries like Francis Ford Coppola doing. Mm-hmm. So I think artistically he wanted to like do like a square American version of something visceral and violent and see what he would get out of it. Mm-hmm. And most people seem to like it. I am not here to, you know, shit on anybody's personal taste, especially in something as inconsequential as a fucking Tom Hanks movie. Like there are certainly bigger fish to fry in this world. I am not looking forward to the audience reaction on Twitter when I do Rick and Morty next week. So,
oh my God.
So that should be fun. Oh, yeah. But I think your reaction, Cardi, is valid. I think from what I'm gathering, from just reading between the lines a little bit, that because you're so skeptical of, you know, white male military authority, that the fact that it was sort of uncomplicated good for the most part. Like they definitely question the logic and ethics of the order, but everybody seemed to come from a place of like genuine concern. Like there was no one that there was no scene of this guy saying, well, this is just horrible publicity. Like there was no villain figure within the power structure. They, whether or not the wisdom of this choice is something anyone would agree with, who knows, but the military authority, you know, they were all good dudes, basically. They were all like, they were all like Yojo and wanted to like make sure that God, this is so weird. I don't mean to interrupt myself, but this is so weird that I'm playing devil's advocate for the military.
I think because I kept thinking of it as like the wars in Afghanistan or Iraq, where there's a lot of like apprehension as to like why we're there. I definitely felt like I was kind of judging everyone in the movie wrong. Like I had to keep pulling myself out of today's wars. And remember, this was like a very different time with like a very clear evil thing happening overseas.
Yeah. Real quick, just what's your reaction to that though? Like you were in those hard to define wars.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's weird because like I did two deployments in Afghanistan, and like the first one was like 2008, 2009. And that one seemed like pretty, like we were trying to like, we'd go around villages, but it was weird because we were just occupying. We weren't really,
yeah,
like, especially that first one, we didn't really do too many like firefights and stuff like that. Like it was basically the Taliban would like put IEDs in the road and try to get us. And then we would try to get the Taliban as they were doing it. But other than that, like we were just kind of like talking to like villagers and stuff like that. And nobody really like, yeah, it wasn't like, oh, we have to get the city. And then we can like push the line back and stuff like that. So like that was a lot different. And then on the second one, like halfway through my second deployment, Bin Laden was killed.
Right.
And I remember like kind of thinking like, are we done now? Like we did what we were supposed to do. Like, am I going home early? Because at that point, shit, that was 2011. We'd been there for 10 years. And it's like, why are we, and everybody was kind of like, why are we still here? And like, I was lucky to not go to Iraq, but like most of my friends that went there, like they didn't believe the WMD stuff. And they were just like, this is dumb. Like we shouldn't be here.
It was a weird time in history. And then to watch this movie that I think that one of the things that people liked about this movie at the time, and they still do, is that because it is uncomplicated and that we had grown up, you know, for decades with complicated, morally ambiguous warfare. And then like, oh, here's this thing. Okay. Tom Hanks. It's Tom Hanks. Cool. Yeah. Tom Hanks wouldn't do us wrong.
I was cussing out Tom Hanks the whole movie. Like, don't you open your freaking mouth and make me fall in love with you, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, all right. Card is a good question. Let's talk about the ethics of this, of the whole plot of this film. They're there to save Private Ryan, and like to save one guy, and they sacrifice like five, including Tom Hanks himself. Did that detract from the message of the film?
I do feel like that question comes up a lot in the movie, like especially after Phoebe's brother dies. Sorry, I don't know
yes.
the character's name. Like they're really like, fuck off, Tom Hanks. And then you see Tom Hanks cry, and I was like, I'm on their side, Tom Hanks. I was like yelling at the TV the whole time. So I feel like they definitely bring up that question a lot, especially like the men who have been picked to go on the journey. I feel like my thought on it is that they want you to feel like to really think about it, I guess.
I think that they do.
Yeah.
I don't, but you know, you get to the end of the film and you know, Tom Hanks is dying and he grabs, you know, Matt Damon, he says, earn this. basically mean earn the deaths, you know, earn the basically the gift that these five guys that laid down their lives for him. I don't know though. Pete, how do you feel about the ethics of this, of the whole plot of this film?
That's, you know, that's the $1 million question. Cause I think for the most part, I agree with the idea of like having to do like the sacrifice for a greater good to like save this family and things like that. And it's weird because then, man, this is like therapy today. Cause like I was over in Afghanistan too. Like, I feel like shitty war Forrest Gump right now. But when Bo Bergdahl went missing, like he went AWOL, and there were, hundreds of patrols like done to try to find him. And I believe six people ended up losing their lives, like looking for him, even though he had like willfully like gone off to the Taliban.
Right.
And everyone kind of being like, you know, that's not worth it. Like, we shouldn't save any, like, we shouldn't sacrifice anymore for this guy who like everybody had known was a deserter. And like, and I kind of agreed with that. Mm-hmm. Because of the fact that it was like, obviously, like, I want everybody to be able to come home, but if you're going to like desert, then, you know, it's not, it doesn't feel fair to like, you know, somebody like lose their dad or their husband or whomever.
Right.
But like this, I guess felt a little bit more like straightforward and.
Yeah.
Well, I did appreciate.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I did appreciate, you know, that there, that especially World War II, like things like did seem simpler. Like there was like the battles were more complex, but it was like, right, we have to stop this like unfathomable evil, and if we don't, then nobody will, and it's gonna be the end of the world. Whereas it was very different, like with us versus the Taliban, because they were a bad group, but they wouldn't have been in the villages unless we were there.
Right.
So like, we're trying to fight them, but if we like just left, like they probably would have just, you know, gone back to farming.
The Taliban were not good dudes at all. They definitely like committed a lot of like atrocities. I think that, you know, I think the Afghanistan theater was a lot easier to digest than like the Iraq one, where, you know, also Saddam was like also not a good dude, but like the reason for being there much more ill defined. I want to jump into a clip. I have avoided clips mostly for Cardi's sanity.
No, okay, do what you need to.
No. This is a dumb comedy podcast. I don't. Last thing I want to do is like people to come with bad vibes. I do have a clip, a non-violent clip, and it does get into the other characters besides Tom Hanks and Matt Damon's character. Private Ryan hasn't shown up at this point yet. So it does. There's not a lot of characterization. Like, the characters are pretty sketchily defined. Like, there's, you know, there's seemingly three out of five, you know, New York City boroughs are represented, and then like there's like pacifism represented, romanticizing war. And then he learns, you know, the how rough it really is. That's the skinny guy that is like the interpreter. So you get the vibe of all these characters very quickly in this section, and I wanted to get away from like the griminess of the film and talk about, you know, the characters such as they were. So we're gonna watch this clip. This is the gripe session scene from Saving Private Ryan.
Where's the sense of risking the lives of the eight of us to save one guy?
20 degrees. Anybody want to answer that?
Driver, think about the poor bastard's mother.
Hey, Doc, I got a mother, all right? I mean, you got a mother. Sarge's got a mother. I mean, shit, I bet even the captain's got a mother. Well, maybe not the captain, but the rest of us got mothers.
There's not a reason why. There's but to do and die.
La 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 la. What the fuck is that supposed to mean, Corporal, huh? We're all supposed to die, is that it?
Upham's talking about our duty as soldiers.
Yes, sir.
We all have orders, and we have to follow them. That supersedes everything, including your mothers.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Even if you think the mission's FUBAR, sir?
Especially if you think the mission's FUBAR.
What's FUBAR? Oh, it's German.
Never heard of that. Sir, I have an opinion on this matter.
Well, by all means, share it with the squad.
Well, from my way of thinking, sir, this entire mission is a serious misallocation of valuable military resources.
Now, go on.
Well, it seems to me, sir, that God gave me a special gift, made me a fine instrument of warfare.
Driving, pay attention. Now, this is the way to gripe. Continue, Jackson.
Well, what I mean by that, sir, is you used to put me in this here sniper rifle anywhere up to and including 1 mile of Adolf Hitler with a clear line of sight, sir. Pack your bags, fellas. War's over. Amen.
Oh, that's brilliant, Bumpkin.
Hey, so, Captain, what about you? I mean, you don't gripe at all?
I don't gripe to you, Riven. I'm a captain. There's a chain of command. Gripes go up, not down, always up. You gripe to me, I gripe to my superior officer, so on, so on, so on. I don't gripe to you. I don't gripe in front of you. You should know that as a Ranger.
I'm sorry, sir, but let's say you weren't a captain, or maybe I was a major. What'd you say then?
Well, in that case, I say this is an excellent mission, sir, with an extremely valuable objective, sir. Worthy of my best efforts, sir. Moreover, I feel heartfelt sorrow for the mother of Private James Ryan. I'm willing to lay down my life and the lives of my men, especially you, Ryden, to ease her suffering.
He's good.
I love him.
All right. That was the gripe session with, you know, a lovely air kiss by Vin Diesel at the end. Can't argue with those results. Pete, quick question for you. So the character of the interpreter, played by Jeremy Davies, his whole thing is he wants to have a bonding experience with the men. He takes a sort of romantic view of war. So he you can see in the clip, you can't hear it because we're on audio for the listeners, but you can see him really eating up this moment. And then of course, you know, half these guys die, and then he ends up, you know, both getting his friend killed and then murdering, you know, someone that he thought was his friend. So, without getting into the plot specifics, did you have the sort of impression when you were joining up that you would get this kind of camaraderie, and did you get it?
Yeah, I, you know, that was like one of the things that, I didn't join like for that reason, but it happens like pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like even guys, like guys that I went to like basic training with, like I haven't seen God now in 15 years. Like we did like 3 months together for basic training, and like the camaraderie like goes really quickly. Like, and I think that's like anytime that like you can share a hardship with somebody, you're going to get that like camaraderie like that much faster. And yeah, I don't think that anything, like I don't think I've ever had a relationship like I do with like a lot of the guys that I was in with. And like even the ones that like, God, this is gonna sound so corny, but go even the it. Ones that like you don't like necessarily, like you still like love, and like there's like I would like run through like machine gun fire for any one of them. And like, I wouldn't do that for like most people that I know on the street. Like, I wouldn't do that for some of my family.
I think that's also part of the appeal of military movies, beyond, you know, the visceral sort of like macho thing that you basically get a cheat death. Yeah, I get that. You know, that's why men are so, why straight men are especially so drawn to this sort of thing. Cardi, watching that clip, how did you feel about this particular scene and your opinion in general on like military films and the military in general? Because you've got a lot of like very visceral reactions to the violence, but what about something like this?
Yeah, I think my first thought was like, I guess I was like, Tom Hanks is like, he's just like, you know, I'm happy to lay down my life. And everyone's like, yeah, that's a good point. And I was like, what? That's the end of the discussion? Like, he barely like took his cigarette out of his mouth to finish saying that. And everyone's like, yeah, you know what? I forgot about that point. Let's all just keep walking. Like,
but I mean, that's the part of the training though. You're supposed to be like, oh yeah, you're right. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, and also he, like, names one specifically who he'd be happy to lay down the law. Get taken out.
The guy who asked the question.
Yeah, so it's like, Yeah, I don't think I would have been a good fit for the military, obviously. My elbows pop too when I exercise.
Yeah.
I think I was still so shocked by that scene where the men in suit decide they're going to sacrifice a bunch of men for this mom at home.
Right.
I was kind of on a tangent. I was like, a woman only gets respect if she's a mom, I guess. Gotta go. You know, I don't know.
That's not invalid. Of course, this is a movie, but almost no women in it whatsoever. But,
I appreciate it up until Matt Damon's horrific story about that girl they
yeah, that wasn't good. That wasn't a good look, you guys. Not even 98.
They like
matter
in the barn unconscious. I was like, shut up, Matt Damon. I almost liked you. I think I was yelling at Spielberg in my head the whole time, and I was like, why do we let Tom Hanks get away with this? Yeah, that was my reaction.
It's a Pete, same question. Do you feel similar, or how do you feel about Tom Hanks's rationale in this scene?
I honestly loved it. Like, I thought that he did a really good job of being the kind of officer that I would have liked in the military, because I think it was a little different in like World War II, obviously. But like, I appreciated that he kind of just like treated them like adults, and like, that doesn't happen very often in the military. Like, when I was in South Korea, like we had a bedtime, and I'm like, you know, like you like, trust me with a grenade launcher. Like, I can stay up past 11. And so like, anytime that like you get like, cause I know that he's putting out, you know, like, well, like, we can't question orders and stuff like that, but he's doing it in a way that like is very clear that like he respects his men and is still kind of like, you know, like, we have to do this. Like, I understand your concerns and your gripes and stuff like that. Like, he made himself like seem approachable. And like, I had a couple good officers. I had a couple like really bad officers. Mm. So I think he Hanks'd me, and he's just like, oh, like, like kind of like, you know, I wish you were my officer. But I did really like that, and I thought that was like a good bit of like banter that kind of that I think did more to humanize a lot of those guys than a lot of the other exposition in the movie.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I picked that scene, because, you know, they're a little programmatic in most other scenes, like especially like Edward Burns' character, because he literally has Brooklyn written across his back as like a character trait, and like. Yeah, like that scene in particular felt looser and more natural to me. I also thought, you know, when I watched this movie, you know, years ago, I wasn't really all that impressed with Tom Hanks's performance. And I know that he had gotten one of his Oscar nominations, but like, I didn't think there was much to it. I was a much bigger fan of his work in like Forrest Gump a few years earlier. But then, you know, watching it now, like it really is like this really warm, natural performance that is deceptively hard to give without it getting like maudlin or pat or anything like that. Like he definitely plays it where you might not agree with the ethics of what he's saying, especially if you're not a military person. But like he definitely Hanks me as well. I was all for it, and like it made me want to be like a better authority figure to younger queer people and younger queer comedians. So like now I want to Hanks my world is what happened. I want to go out and be a benevolent figure in this hostile world. So thanks, Tom Hanks. You've done good there. All right. We do need to wrap this up. We're about at the end of our hour. Cotty, give me your final summation. Your opinions have been pretty clear, but wrap it up. Let's sit. Let's talk. How do you feel going forward? Are you just going to put this out of your mind and never speak of it again, or what? How do you feel?
I think ultimately I'm thankful, because I don't. I guess I'm, like I said, I'm so far left, and I'm very far left. I wouldn't say like. I would never say like, oh, we should get rid of the military or something naive like that. But no. I am very far left. So I am thankful, I guess, to, I guess, kind of get into the mind's eye of someone who grew up really different than me and, you know, might be programmed differently than me is what I ultimately will take away from it. I don't think I'll ever sit through it again. And I definitely forget some of the scenes, but, yeah, I think ultimately I just feel thankful for the different kind of point of view, and also just like more, especially Memorial Day weekend, just remembering exactly why we have it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's easier to, you know, think about World War II in context of Memorial Day weekend than, you know, something like Vietnam. Like my dad, he never got misty eyed on this weekend. He's like, oh cool, it's a day off work. Like he didn't have a real connection to the point of the holiday versus his experience. But Pete, same question. Your summation, you just watched this again. You've had this discussion with your fellow Pinko commie. how do you feel moving forward?
I have to say, like, I forgot, like, I knew it was a good movie. I forgot, like, how good it was for, like, a lot of, I guess, unexpected reasons because of, like, the way that it does things. But then also, like, from like, the technical, like, standpoint, like, that first scene, like, this, if I can go off on, like, a tangent for
yeah, go for
a quick second and tell a war story.
Yes, absolutely.